in order to reject it, so that the law of the land, so to speak, will be that we don't accept that, and that federal regulation, statute, judges will no longer have to follow and look at those for reasoning. And that's what I'm hoping a presidential, pulling out of the UN and a presidential commission in tandem can actually hopefully achieve that. Now, the problem is the left is relentless, as you see with these lawsuits with kids on climate. I mean, some of the stuff is just insane. My favorite was a recent 60 Minutes, and I did a whole special on Climate Depot on this. A young teenage girl, maybe 12, 13, said that she put her ankle in global warming. And what does that mean? 60 Minutes thought, these kids aren't speaking gobbledygook. Yes, they are. She was talking about her house was flooded during heavy rain. She blamed the heavy rain on man-made global warming, and when she got out of bed that morning, her house had flooded, so she was up to her ankles in flood water. So she stepped in global warming before. She knows what it means to be a victim of global warming. 60 Minutes runs with this. This is the nonsense they teach. And I have a whole chapter in my book on this, on just the indoctrination of kids. It works. Kids are just completely... And here's another thing. Parents used to worry, oh, I hate I hate to send them off to four-year liberal college. They'll come back liberals. They're going to be indoctrinated. Hey, you don't have to worry about that anymore. Kids 12, 13, 14 are being indoctrinated by social media now. And social media, as I've already mentioned, Google, YouTube now has the disclaimers on climate skeptics. Twitter has all kinds of accusations on manipulating, whether it's on abortion issue, on climate issue. Facebook, I had a video that has now over 10 million hits. I was the poster child that they used, saying, how could Facebook allow evil denier Mark Morano to have a Facebook video, 3-minute video of over 10 million views? They went after Mark Zuckerberg for allowing this. Climate activist, the guy who authored the 97% climate consensus, actually went after Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, and they started labeling him a climate denier. And this is how bad it's gotten. So 12, 13-year-olds, I had my daughter come home at age 14, Dad, did you see another black man was shot by a cop? I mean, she's getting all the alerts from social media, Instagram, all this stuff that's like that Black Lives Matter. That's the news view they're getting, and it's done in a snappy, exciting way. They're not watching CBS Evening News, or they're not getting this from liberal college professors because they're not in college. So the uphill battle we have to fight is so great and steep, you can't lose hope. But, right now we have President Trump, and we have to relish every minute and make every minute count right now.
I always wonder if his tweets are kind of like chumming the water.
I do, too. It's like
keeps all the sharks busy while they swim down below them. Because you look at it,
he distracts them so he can do
so he can go do stuff.
It's amazing that people actually don't think when he said he was a stable genius, I believed it. And people thought, oh, what an idiot. He's this. He is probably one of the most intelligent, strategic presidents we've ever elected.
I agree. He's playing chess versus checkers. And most people out there are playing political checkers. And he's like,
you watch it. It's like, squirrel, and they all run over there, and. Meanwhile, back at the farm, they're getting all this stuff done. But we have like a minute left. So in that, anything you want to promote?
Well, first of all, yes, a couple things. My book, Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, will be coming out with a new edition probably in the next 6 weeks or within 2 months. It's going to have a special update with the Green New Deal. It'll include a whole extra bonus chapter on that. That's coming out. We have a sequel to the movie that'll be coming out in 2019, Climate Hustle. Climate Hustle 2, Rise of the Climate Heretic, although it's not actually called. It's Climate Hustle 2, or we'll have working titles, but we're doing a sequel that's going to be on specifically the United Nations climate agenda and the whole climate movement. So the biggest thing I want to leave you with is the Green New Deal, even if you accept the United Nations and Al Gore's climate claims, setting aside the science for a minute, climatologist Pat Michaels ran the numbers using their own, the United Nations and EPA own numbers. You wouldn't even be able to tell a temperature difference 100 years from now. You wouldn't even be able to tell the emission difference 100 years from now if the United States fully implemented the most expensive domestic policies, the Green New Deal in the history of our country. It wouldn't even have an impact. So the idea is you first want to look at cost benefit analysis. This is
we gotta run, Mark.
Trojan horse.
We're hitting the news.
You're awesome, Mark.
We love you, Mark Morano. Come back on
again. Thank you, Aaron.
You're
thank you, Debbie.
Rock star.
Oh, yeah. If you got gunsmiths and you could handle that, what happens if if you can't fix a gun?
Well, if we can't fix it, we'll find what the market value of that gun is or find out what you paid for it. Some of the stuff from way back there that we don't have records on anymore, we just find what the market value of that gun would be in good condition. And then we allow you to take that credit, and we'll write you a check back for it if you don't want another gun, or we'll give you your money back, or we'll apply that amount of money to a purchase of a new one.
Wow. Is Christmas, I mean, do people come in, or are they buying a lot of guns in preparation? Now, obviously, we're doing this recorded right now because this will air on Christmas Day, but traditionally, as people head toward Christmas, do you get a lot of business in there?
Yeah, December is about 60% over a normal month. So we go, you know, 60, and it's 60% over, and we're only open 3 weeks in December up till Christmas, and then we close between Christmas and New Year's. So
okay.
We do 60% more than average in 3 weeks instead of 4 weeks.
Holy cow. That's amazing. So
yeah.
If people are listening right now, you're not going to be open for the next week.
No.
Okay.
We give our employees some time off and go spend with the family, and we're ready to go hunting, and we're ready for them to go be able to travel and be with their family in different parts of the country. So it's just one of the perks that we give our customers, I mean our employees,
right,
for doing such a good job all year.
Well, and that's why we're doing this show recorded, because I'm not going to ask anybody to come in and work on Christmas Day. So, you know, this every few years, you know, the Sunday for the show falls on Christmas. You mentioned going hunting, and that's one of the things I love in our family traditionally. You know, it was always a hunt somewhere right around Christmas, not on Christmas Day because we spent that together, but that was kind of the time when we all went out and did family stuff. Was it that way for you?
Oh, yeah. We would finish Christmas morning, have lunch and all of that stuff, and then it was time for my mom said, you got to take the tree down and put all the stuff up, and then you can go to the ranch. And so we were scrambling to tear Christmas down in the evening, and then we would make it down there that evening to hunt Christmas evening, and then had the whole family between Christmas and New Year's. It's always been a tradition of ours to hunt between Christmas and New Year's.
That's a smart mom. She knew how much you wanted to go hunting, so she said, all right, you got to take everything down before you go. I bet it got done quickly.
It got done very.
Before we begin, everyone do me a favor. I need a little thing I wrote called a Federalist Paper.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I lost the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sickle makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. You have my estimate in a group of men, it doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan over a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Does anybody know what this crypto thing means?
To me, sounds like the new get broke quick scheme. A bunch of fools from across the land investing in something they don't even understand.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Tokens Radio Show. It's Sunday, November the 12th. My name is Christy Matthews.
I know, it's middle of November.
Golly.
Have you started your Christmas shopping yet?
You're funny. No. You know, I start thinking about it a little bit, and it's like, oh, my goodness.
Oh, my.
I don't know if I want to go there. I'm not in the Christmas spirit.
Oh, I'm kind of getting there. I'm looking forward to it. I'm ready to put my tree up.
I don't have a place to put
a tree.
Last
year we didn't put a tree up. So
yeah, I don't have a place to. But,
well,
I just don't want to be stressed out and, you know.
Yeah. Just take it in stride. It's kind of like cleaning closets. 15 minutes at a time.
There you go. Anyhow.
And you are?
I am Linda Kitt.
Great. And we're joined today with Christina, who's running the production booth and monitoring the chat room.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So good to have you here.
Before we move on, I have to ask her. Somebody asked us, how long have you been in this country?
1 year.
1 year.
There you go.
Yeah. Thank you.
Exactly.
Glad
1 year.
You're here.
I came in the end of the October.
Okay.
I'm glad
we were talking
you.
About you, but it was all good stuff.
Yeah.
Just
thank
so you know.
We're so glad.
I appreciate knowing that.
Well, we're excited about today's show. We're
going
to be continuing our mining conversation, and we're going to be bringing on a guest here in just a short bit.
Now, if you'd like to find a copy of our previous shows, you can find them on tokensradioshow.com. And you'll find previous news, previous shows, resources, and all sorts of things on that website. And you can check here at KCNR1460.com, and you can find a copy of our show here, as well as any of the other shows that play here on KCNR. So, what a day. Okay, I'm going to calm down. It's been rush.
Breathe.
Yes. So let's touch on where Bitcoin's been. It's 37,174 before the show started. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Ethereum's at 2,057. XRP is at 66. And XLM's at 12.5 cents. So we're pretty excited to be bringing on our guest here pretty soon. It's going to be Christine Cranley. She's an independent financial representative, and she's also a member and consultant with the Bitcoin Blockchain Council.
And she's a wonderful person.
Yeah, she's going to be calling in here in a few minutes.
Yeah. All right, the Queen of Dragons sponsors the show today. This local establishment takes great pride in delivering top-quality items at competitive prices. They ensure the safety and freshness of all of their offerings through vigorous testing. Listener MJ has this to say. Their high CBD THC products I can obtain through the Queen of Dragons make the life of this senior much more pleasant and pain-free. And DH says, their products are great for my pain. A little goes a long way. The Queen of Dragons has a diverse range of premium products freshly packaged daily. They're open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., conveniently located at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard. Stay updated on their deals by following at Queen Dragons on X or contact them at 530-276-9771.
Yeah, that's amazing. the endorsements and the testimonials keep coming in. It's wonderful.
It is.
They're a great business to work with.
And I just want to throw it out there to the listeners. If you want to sponsor us, you could always do that too. There's plenty to go around.
Oh, absolutely. You bet.
That's probably our guest. Yeah.
So, Shasta County has resources where Bitcoin mining could be a viable addition to our local communities. You know, we talked about that last week. Mm-hmm. We have hydro. We have biomass. There's some natural gas. What other resources are there?
Well, we have water.
We have solar. We have wind.
We do have a lot of resources here.
Yeah.
And there is some resources that we could tap into that maybe isn't like solar or whatever.
Right.
You know. So with that, I guess we do have Christine on the line.
So let's find out how these resources might help benefit our local communities. And let's welcome our guest, Christine Cranley. Christine is an investment advisor representative, a contractor, and a member of the Texas Blockchain Council. She has extensive expertise in the business of Bitcoin mining and how it can complement local government's general plans. Without further ado, welcome, Christine. It's great to have you on the show.
Yeah. Hi, Christine.
Hello, ladies. It's great to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's good to hear yours, too.
Hey, congratulations on you were selected to speak at the North American Blockchain Summit. Way to go.
Thank you very much. We are so looking forward to welcoming everyone. The summit is actually going to be here in my hometown of Fort Worth. So we're really looking forward to it. And I guess apropos to the topic today, part of the reason that the Texas Blockchain Council picked Fort Worth to host the summit this year is because we were the first city to mine Bitcoin.
That is so cool.
Oh, we want to learn more about how that got started and how they're doing and all of that. That is that's amazing. I mean, that's the whole purpose of having this conversation here today. I mean, we can talk and clamor on every weekend like we do about the benefits of Bitcoin and how it can help our economy and use stranded resources, but you're actually living proof of it being done, and love to hear this story.
And before she gets started, I want to bring up, you know, in Shasta County, we've had a lot of things going on, and the one reason that we really got into wanting this program was we have some elected officials that have stepped outside the box, so to speak, and doing different things that other cities aren't doing or other counties aren't doing. So we're hoping that they'll take a good look at what we're presenting today and, you know, get their interest up and maybe researching it out.
Yeah, definitely. I think that in some cases, just given the political climate up here, maybe they're just a little leery to maybe venture off in what some perceive to be the weeds.
Right.
But we need to look towards the future, because what we've been doing isn't working. It's only digging a bigger hole for us.
Right. And education is the key. So.
Yeah. So.
Definitely.
No, I don't know.
Where do you want to start?
Oh, I'd love to hear the Fort Worth story.
Yeah,
I would
too.
Why don't we start there?
Okay.
Yeah. What do you say, Christine?
Well, it's interesting you talk about just the nervousness of venturing into something new. That was definitely the case here in Fort Worth. They really took a risk. The head of the he was working with the mayor, and the one that was put in charge of this project, he was working with the Texas Blockchain Council, and the Texas Blockchain Council was going to be donating the mining computers. We call them ASICs. And so he wasn't going to have to pay for them, but it was kind of a hard sell for the council. And they had told him, you do not get one penny for this project. And so we donated the computers, and they took a risk, and it was interesting because they were hoping, you know, best case scenario, they were hoping for maybe a couple million impressions. That's kind of the currency of knowing that you have a story that's put you on the map. Well, Fort Worth ended up getting 700 million impressions.
Wow.
So, can you explain more about what that means for our listeners who may not understand exactly what that is? Because on social media, we know what impressions are. But what does that mean in mining?
Yes. Well, no, it's social media. So this
was
just eyes on our city.
Got it. Okay.
Articles all over the world about what was going on in Fort Worth. So I just bring it up because it ended up being a real positive for the city.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of a funny story. Carlo, the gentleman that was putting the whole project together, he tells the story about being really nervous in the first month. And it turned out we ended up making $6 profit in the first month, and so we didn't have to spend a penny on this project. Because it was at a time when Bitcoin was going down. I think there had been something in the news, and so it was going down. He was really nervous. So we were able to get 700 million impressions without spending a penny and actually making $6 a profit in the first month.
Wow.
Boy, that's a heck of an advertisement rate of return on advertising.
Yeah.
That
is terrific. So, yeah. I'm a little late to the party sometimes, so I just caught on to what all of that meant. So you had mentioned that there was a donation of computers to run the mining operation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
How many miners
were donated? I think it was just a few at first.
Okay.
And it's still really a pilot project. It was mostly just a proof of concept.
Okay.
To show that it can be done, and it wasn't really as a huge moneymaker for the city. It was just kind of, it was a first in, just doing this kind of thing and bringing attention to it. But my coworker, Steve Kennard, he has put together a non-profit organization, I'm trying to remember what it's called. It's for Bitcoin mining. Basically, it allows people to donate old computers or just in different ways. So the Bitcoin community at large that would like to see more of a mass adoption by municipalities are able to then donate either money or equipment or even hash rate. So, Bitcoin that they are mining themselves, and they could send some of it at and have it tax deductible while also supporting the mission of spreading the word about the way that this can really benefit municipalities. So I don't actually believe that the nonprofit was up and running when they started it, but since then it is. I have to find the name of that nonprofit. It's like the,
That's real interesting of like refurbishing or reusing computers, because we know how fast they become outdated, for one.
Yes.
That they could be reused, and we're always talking about, I hate the term, you know, green energy and things like that, your carbon footprint and things like that, where I'm sure those computers otherwise, they would just go in a landfill type thing and that'd be the end of it.
They might. Yes, they might. I couldn't imagine that. Well, there are probably older ASIC ASIC processors, right? And maybe
correct.
Coming from other mining operations. So, as Linda was just alluding to, the concern about improving the environment, which is one of the complaints about Bitcoin mining
anyway.
Because of the amount of energy that's required, but there's an offset to that, that it also produces energy if you know how to capture that energy and how to, and new technologies have emerged on how to run those miners that run less, that takes less energy.
Right.
They run much cooler now. I mean, it's really awesome stuff. But I would imagine the nonprofits who are receiving those outdated computers, maybe there might be a little retooling that needs to be done
I'm
for some of them, you know, fans, that type of thing. But they're still very usable, and for putting on a pilot project, for instance, that would be ideal.
But what a good recycle,
absolutely.
Recycling system there with the Bitcoin in many ways.
Exactly. And sometimes you'd be surprised, you know, my firm invests in Bitcoin mining with stranded gas, so gas that is a byproduct or really a waste product if there's no way to get it to market from some oil drilling. And so we invest in this energy that has no other offtake, and it can be really profitable. And sometimes we like the older computers, just the second generation, because you get a quicker return on your investment. So, as you say, there's just because it's not the latest and greatest doesn't mean that it's not necessarily going to be profitable and can't be reused.
Right, yeah.
So if you were to go in, let's say Fort Worth hadn't happened yet, and you were going to go in and talk to your leaders at the city of Fort Worth, how would you explain Bitcoin mining to them and its role in the Bitcoin ecosystem and how it might benefit the city at large? I mean, obviously, they've already bought onto this, but let's just pretend that they didn't.
That's a great question, because I think as Bitcoiners, sometimes we want to go in and talk about the revolution that Bitcoin brings, just with the monetary system and decentralization. But that's not necessarily the best in for some of these conversations.
Right.
You know, you get the glazed over eyes.
Right.
So really just as a business opportunity. So I like to speak about Bitcoin mining as this great big sponge that is capable of going out and soaking up stranded energy resources. And as a good friend of mine, Lisa Ho in the space, always likes to say, monetizing every molecule. Mm-hmm. And so it's a way of getting a greater ROI on the energy resources that you have that may be being underutilized.
Is Fort Worth an energy-producing town? In other, like here, we have two cities that have electric municipalities. They produce their own electricity, their own electric companies. Is Fort Worth like that?
Well, Fort Worth, we're a part of the greater Texas, which is we're an unregulated grid in the sense, or deregulated in the sense that everywhere that power is being created, there's a competition to bring it to market. And so it allows for specific opportunities in Texas that you don't necessarily have in other ISOs, other grids around the country. And so everywhere in Texas, there's places in Texas that are in the wind corridor. There's a lot of wind generation going on. We've got cheap land for solar, so there's a lot out there. Fort Worth is sitting on a lot of natural gas, and so there is a lot of opportunity where I currently live with gas that, as I said earlier, either isn't close to a pipeline, so it can't be sold to the grid, or it could be, there's places in Texas because we have so much natural gas, but it actually costs money even to get it into the pipeline. There may be more gas than can be consumed, and you have to kind of push it into the pipeline. You have to spend money to get it into the pipeline. So there's opportunities, whether you're close to the pipeline or not, to monetize that gas that we have a plentiful supply of, to use it maybe as a diversified income stream, or even just as a way of monetizing something that was being flared, burned, because there was nothing else to do with it.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so there's probably other cities that have a resource like that that they could tap into, whether it's natural gas or whatever, that they would have excessive amounts of it that it's just going to waste otherwise. It's going into
exactly.
the atmosphere.
Well,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that's, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, please finish your thought.
Well, that's one of the things when you even take a step back from Texas, just globally, the beauty of the Bitcoin mining industry. Like I said, it's like a sponge that is able to go out and soak up wasted resources, mm-hmm. but it also incentivizes creativity in using different resources. So let me give you a few examples. There is a lake in Guatemala, Bitcoin Lake, and they are known for the fact that there's people there that are using used cooking oil to mine Bitcoin with. And in doing so, they're actually cleaning up the environment, because a lot of that used cooking oil would make its way into the lake.
Right.
And so they're using that resource. Then in Africa, there is a really neat project, Gridless. And what they're doing is they are helping build out microgrids all over Africa. So whether the population, they might have water, or they might have solar, but part of the problem with building out grids in these remote areas is it costs a lot of money, and it's difficult to get a return on investment. And so there may be private companies that come in to use, whether it be solar or water, but the people aren't actually accustomed to using all that much power. And so they're putting in a lot of money, but they're not getting a lot back, which is, I mean, it's humanitarian-wise, it's beautiful because they're bringing power, but, you know, from a business perspective, it's hard to find the incentive to do that if you're looking for a return.
Right.
So the Bitcoin miners then go there, and they say, okay, look, we are going to be the buyers of last resort. So if the people in the city need the power from the water or the solar, then they get it first. But then if they don't need it, we're going to mine Bitcoin with it, and we are going to split our revenue with you. And so what that does is it incentivizes more and more infrastructure build out. And then just another example, El Salvador, famous for being the first country, I believe, to make Bitcoin legal tender. And in El Salvador, they have a lot of geothermal, they've got a lot of volcanoes. And so they are using the heat from their volcanoes to mine Bitcoin. And they've even created what they've called volcano bonds, where they are basically crowdfunding their nation by selling these bonds that are backed with the revenue that they are getting from mining Bitcoin with their volcanoes. And interestingly enough, timely, I heard that this week El Salvador's ratings for their bonds have just gone up this week in the same week that ours have gone down.
We have got a negative rating.
So anyway, it's just a couple examples of people using their creativity and using resources that were stranded in the past in order to make a profit for their community.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's interesting because a lot of people would never think all the different ways you can mine Bitcoin. You know, you would assume maybe it's just the flare-off gas or, you know what I mean, that you could use just about any type of resource in order to mine.
Exactly. Landfill, the methane from a landfill.
Exactly.
I think now this is a snarky comment. I was thinking methane from...
The cows?
From the cows.
The cows, absolutely.
I knew where you were going.
I saw a really neat little documentary. I think I reposted it on my LinkedIn about farmers in Ireland that are using the methane from their dairies to mine Bitcoin. And then you probably heard, but Marathon just announced last week a large project in coordination with a group called Nodal, I believe, where they are mining Bitcoin with methane from landfill.
Yeah, isn't Marathon like a big oil crude producer?
They're a mining operation, aren't they?
Yes, Marathon is one of the top publicly traded mining companies.
Right. Okay. Yeah. All right. I think maybe we stop right there and take a break because that time, went by really quick. And we will pick up the conversation on the other side. The music I picked, I know I'm a day late, but it does have to do with veterans and still to say thank you to our veterans out there. So with that, we'll take a break and we'll see you in about 5.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
This is an encore presentation of Tokens Radio Show on KCNR.
Okay, and welcome to this week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host here with the latest local updates. Our first brief addresses voter absence. Low voter turnout was a concern in the recent Shasta County election. While some see elections as the bedrock of democracy, assumptions about how to increase participation can undermine the integrity of the process. A report from the Election Integrity Project California questioned if elections should favor convenience or mail-in ballots. These options seem attractive but reduce security and transparency, the report argued. With many disappointed in recent election outcomes,
how can turnout rise without compromising integrity? Suggested ideas include offering rides to polling places, community engagement, and recruiting poll workers. Returning to in-person voting can help, while limited absentee ballots remain an option for those unable to vote in person. Restoring trust and integrity in elections may increase turnout more than quick fixes. With wisdom and effort, we can have accessible and secure elections. Get involved and let officials know you support voting reforms. The power ultimately lies with the people. Next up, Tuesday's election in Shasta County attracted significant attention due to the controversy surrounding whether ballots would be counted by hand or machine. The county had terminated its contract with Dominion Voting Systems to allow hand counting, despite opposition from the county registrar. The election itself proceeded smoothly overall. Dozens of observers, including state advocacy groups concerned about election integrity and media from Sacramento and Los Angeles, came to monitor the election. The Secretary of State's office also sent observers. The registrar reported no major disruptions. In a related story, after several local elections offices around the country received suspicious packages containing fentanyl this week, Shasta County's Elections Department has stopped opening its mail as a precaution. The county clerk said the suspicious packages sent to other offices looked similar to their own recent mail, though they did not contain ballots. All mail has been placed in the sealed bin until the Public Health Department advises how to safely handle it. This delay in opening mail does not currently impact vote counting, and the remaining ballots will not be counted until November 20th. The Shasta County Elections Office recently installed a 7-foot fence to increase security. Elections departments nationwide have implemented extra security measures amid ongoing threats and harassment related to claims of election rigging. These steps aim to protect staff, though the alleged threats remain an unfortunate reality. In our last brief, a recent initiative called Press Forward aims to combat fake news and increase trust in local news outlets ahead of the 2024 elections. However, some are concerned about potential liberal bias. The CEO of Press Forward has a history of supporting Democratic politicians. The organization's press releases also use left-leaning buzzwords, raising questions about its impartiality. Meanwhile, a separate lawsuit against Gannett, the media company that owns USA Today, Redding's Record Searchlight, and other local papers across 46 states alleges racial discrimination. The lawsuit claims Gannett has been firing white employees to meet diversity goals. There is evidence that white workers have been denied promotions and salary increases. Gannett has set a target to raise the number of non-white employees in leadership roles by 30% by 2025. The concern is that with the injection of funding from initiatives like Press Forward, political influence and bias may start to reach small-town news outlets through companies like Gannett. This could impact local coverage and public opinion in the lead-up to the 2024 elections. Listeners should be aware of this lawsuit and the potential for political bias to infiltrate local news and impact the 2024 elections through initiatives like Press Forward and media companies like Gannett. Thank you for listening to your Town Hall Brief. Become part of the conversation at Shasta Lake Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X, formerly Twitter.
And we're back.
Yes. That yeah. Good music choices, Linda.
Thank you. And I don't want to forget, if you want to call in, give us a call at 530-605-4567. If you have a comment or question for our guests or for us or anything pertaining to the cryptocurrency world, we'll try to answer your questions.
Well, and maybe a very pointed question is, what's your thoughts on bringing Bitcoin mining to Shasta County?
Yes.
We would love to hear that.
Yeah. And Christina, do you have a comment on that? Help us out.
Well, I actually, as you ladies know, I have the privilege of spending the summer in Shasta County, and I'm in love with it out there. I know. I feel like it's a bit of a forbidden love. Texan has a crush in California.
Well, many Californians love California, but are in Texas now.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Wow.
I know a few people.
Their hearts are still here, but they're there.
Well, Yes, I understand you're the Texas of California, from what I was informed.
Oh, we're the Lodestar people, I guess you could say, up here in the north part.
You want to say feel like you're under a microscope? Yes, definitely.
Yeah. We're the Lone Star people of California, I'm telling you, you know?
That's good.
Oh, my goodness.
Excellent.
I love it. Well, so when I was out there this summer, I actually had a couple conversations about that because I just can't seem to not talk about Bitcoin mining.
I can't understand it.
For financial, you know, disclosures, I am invested in Bitcoin. I'm invested in Bitcoin mining. None of this is financial advice. But
that's,
you know,
right.
So I was talking to people about Chatham County and some of the resources you have out there. And obviously, you've got your beautiful dam. But also just, someone was mentioning all the biomass that
mm-hmm.
you pick up
yeah.
when you're cleaning up the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you do with all that waste? You know, can you turn that into Bitcoin mining? And I know that you have a lot of cows out there, right?
I don't think as much as biomass. I think there's much more biomass than there are cows.
I was going to say something really snarky, but I'll just let that one go, okay?
But we have wind.
We have solar.
Solar, I believe, is a bit more on the private side. I'm not aware of any of our municipalities using solar. But solar is definitely a possibility and definitely an area that is pretty hot and sunny for a good part of the year. We have a few months where it's not so cool. But
I think here in the North State, and I may be wrong, but I think we're like the second sunniest city in the United States. I could be wrong. It may be three or four in there. But we're one of the sunniest cities in the United States.
Beautiful.
So
well,
we have
I'd
our
love,
share
I'd love
landfills,
to make...
too.
Yes. Well, and I'd love to talk a little bit about wind and solar.
Because
one of the things you're going to be wanting to think about if you're mining Bitcoin in an area, what are the incentives? What are the resources you have? What are the incentives? And obviously out in California, there's a lot of incentives for the renewables. And so you can leverage that because with Bitcoin mining, the one with the cheapest cost of power wins. So that is the major input. I mean, the second input is going to be the cost of the mining machines. And because the market's been down for a long time with Bitcoin, we have found in the investments we're doing, it's been a pretty good time to buy. When Bitcoin goes up, the price of the machines is going to go up pretty quickly as
well. Even like when it started climbing this last week?
Yes, but I think we're still flush with quite a few machines.
Yes,
so,
I think so too.
I haven't seen the ASICs exploding up just yet. But
like you were saying, there's probably excess out there because there were a number of mining companies that shut down during the bear market.
Exactly. Yeah. And so as long as we're still flush with those extra, that keeps the price down. But one of the things we found with wind and solar, where Bitcoin mining adds a very unique aspect to that type of power, is with wind and solar you have what's called a duck curve. So if you imagine the shape of a duck with a head and then like the belly going down, the up and down. With wind and solar, there's obviously an overabundant supply when it's windy and when it's sunny. But when the sun goes down or the wind stops blowing, then you don't have enough. And so also when you integrate that with a broader grid, you have to balance the grid. The grid has to remain at a certain level, so 60 hertz. And just as an example, recently Finland came online with their very first nuclear plant, which is very dependable, reliable, and it was bringing down the price of energy for the people in Finland. But because Finland has so much wind power, there were times when the price went negative. Mm-hmm. So it was costing more to create it than they could get for it. And so they ended up having to shut down their nuclear plant, which is very bad for that kind of equipment.
Sure.
And so when you have Bitcoin miners come on the scene as the buyers of last resort, well, then when there is sufficient demand for the wind and the solar, then the people will buy that power. But when there's too much, you end up what we call shaving off the peaks of the duck curves and pulling up the valleys because, again, thinking of a sponge, the Bitcoin miners come in and they soak up that power that isn't being used.
Right.
Gotcha.
And, you know, that problem does exist here. The stranded energy problem is, from what I've heard from one of our city leaders, is that with the wind that's coming, the wind power that's coming in, is that it's creating an imbalance in the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And his concern is there's going to come a time when we have all of these electric vehicles that need to be charged, and there's going to be a choice where the cities are going to supply their customers, their homes, but if there's somebody trying to charge up at a power station, if they're, you know, traveling on the roadway or whatever, those may not be charged. They may not be able to operate during a brownout. And so, you know, it's talking about the grid in Finland, I see that possibly being a problem here with what we've been experiencing with the conversion over from natural gas and our traditional energy sources. We've shut down a couple of nuclear power plants in this state,
mm-hmm.
and we've gone to solar and wind.
And mm-hmm. to your point there, we know that the grid is overloaded in
yes.
many aspects here in California, like the brownouts or blackouts, whatever you want to call them. We do know because of the wind conditions, a lot of times PG&E just goes, you know what? You guys are done for today. We're shutting you off.
Well, yeah, they're worried about getting sued
for fire.
Yeah,
but that still creates another problem.
What a crazy state.
Yeah, it creates the problem of the grid not being available to people at all.
Exactly. You know, and that ends up. So this is another place that Bitcoin mining comes and strengthens grids, because the thing that incentivizes more infrastructure build out is money coming in, right? You
right.
have to be able to make a return on your invested capital if you're going to be building out infrastructure. And if you're not building out infrastructure, then you're going to continue to have these brownout problems. And so because the miners come in as the buyers of last resort, if they're on grid, you know, they're able to soak up that power when it goes cheap or negative. But then if they're off-grid, maybe they're doing stranded gas or, you know, methane or whatever. Sometimes they also have the potential to sell that power back to the grid in times of emergency.
Right.
This is something that Texas has seen quite a bit of, because Bitcoin miners are unique in that they can shut off in an instant.
Right.
We talk about them in Texas as large, flexible load. Load is just someone that consumes power from the grid, right? And so we're large and we're flexible. We can shut off instantly and it doesn't damage our product. And so in the latest winter storm, in winter beginning of 2022, there's a really neat grid chart that we have where when there was a need for power and the price started spiking up, all the miners came offline, and so it ends up bringing the price of power back down and stabilizing the grid. We didn't end up having a blackout at that time because we had built out infrastructure and we had all these miners that returned back enough power for, I think I heard it said, 21 million homes.
Wow.
And then when there wasn't a need anymore, then they came back online.
And what a difference a year makes. I remember what happened in 2021 with the, you know, you guys had that southern polar blast.
Yeah.
Right.
But if I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, is that the mining operations weren't as well established at that time.
That's correct.
As they were, like what you're talking about, just a year ago.
Exactly. Yeah, after China banned Bitcoin, a lot of miners came here. And so because of that, it ended up, as I said, incentivizing more build-out, and so we didn't have the same problem that we had during that storm in 2021.
Christine, so you had mentioned that you have some miners that that can go out into remote locations and harvest, like, say, methane gas, flared gas. They're off-grid. How are they containing that extra energy, and how could they sell that back to the grid?
Well, if they're far away, they can't necessarily. So it kind of just depends. But the way that it works, I guess it depends on which kind of energy you're using. But in the mining that we like to do with the stranded gas, so we bring a generator out there to turn that that gas into power, and then we just bring it. It's basically a shipping container of the Bitcoin mining computers, and you just set it down there next to the wellhead, and we're able to turn it into power that way.
Interesting.
There's also, you know, there's people talk a lot about batteries, and you know, some of the pushback against mining, they say, well, you should just fill batteries with that power. But the problem with batteries is you can't pick up that battery and take it to, let's say, San Francisco. Right? It's not going anywhere. And so when there's a need, you draw down the power in the battery a little bit for those that are close. But there's not really a way to store it. You could store it, but you can't take that battery anywhere. But the thinking behind Bitcoin mining is basically you're taking that excess money and you're storing it in a digital asset that's able to hold the energy, the value of a day's labor if people are purchasing it. So it's kind of an interesting way of thinking of taking stranded energy and turning it into basically digital monetary energy.
That's cool. And then, of course, for the municipality that may be running those miners, and I know we were talking about private industry, but let's take the city of Fort Worth, for instance. At what point in time might they start realizing some Satoshis or Bitcoins?
Well,
are they solving the algorithmic problem for them to win a block and earn the Bitcoin?
Well, and that's where when you move from a little pilot project just to bring eyes on the city to a bigger project, you start to see the returns and the real value for a city. Because, as we said in the beginning, the make or break for a mining project is what price are you mining Bitcoin at? And so how many cents per kilowatt hour are you paying? So are you paying like 7 cents? You really kind of want to be under 5 cents a kilowatt hour if you're going to be really profitable. But cities have access to several different kinds of resources. So do they have on-grid power that's really cheap? Do they have excess power in some of the renewables? And one of the interesting things about the mining network is the number of miners online adjusts the difficulty of how hard it is to find a hash, let's say. Okay. And so what happens is when Bitcoin stays down for a long time, a lot of the miners that have higher prices of power, they start going offline. Maybe they're going bankrupt. Maybe they were over leveraged, but they come offline, the 7 cents, the 6 cents, the 5 cents, the 4 cents. But then the system is going to adjust the difficulty to make it easier to mine Bitcoin, and suddenly you're more profitable than you were because it's easier to find the winning block. And so the ones with the cheapest cost of power stay alive longer. Now, there is also other considerations. Maybe you're incentivized for wind and solar. maybe you're paid to remove trash. I have a friend in Canada that uses old tires and he turns them into diesel. He's basically being paid 20 cents a kilowatt hour to mine Bitcoin. I know another project that is using the mash from the creation of whiskey, and you pay a lot of money to get rid of that mash. So if they're paying you for the power that you're using to mine Bitcoin, the profits can be quite good because you're basically mining with energy that people are paying you to have in the first place. So I think as cities, municipalities realize the profit potential for using some of their wasted or under-leveraged energy resources, and then...